Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast, where you learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secure retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in. Because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast. I'm the Big Mike.
Mike Zlatnik. And today it is my pleasure and a privilege to welcome Jim Oliver. Hi, Jim.
Hey, Mike. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on the podcast. And you hail from Naples, Florida, and you're an expert in internet banking, and you also help folks with their financial freedom and abundance. You have, I guess, a coaching business in that area. So tell us a little bit about Jim, again, family, your hometown, Naples, Florida. It's a that's a great place to be.
Yeah, it's paradise. It really is. Right now, the weather is going to be in the kind of the mid-80s, and it'll be perfect weather till the end of June. So when everybody else is getting cold, we're perfect. But yeah, I live here with my granddaughter. I'm kind of a single grandfather parent of a 15-year-old, and we love the golf and just enjoy the weather and everything in Naples. And like I said, it's paradise.
That's great to hear. Yeah, I've seen the situation where the grandparents become parents and they take care of their grandkids, and that's great. So whatever the circumstances, it's important to take care of the family.
Absolutely.
So let's talk a little bit about infinite banking. We've had a number of guests on a podcast in the past, so it's not a new topic. But how do you define infinite banking? How does it work in your world? The way I understand it, it's a whole life insurance policy overloaded with cash. And then you use it to borrow money to do things, but it's kind of your safe part of your portfolio. The cash just sits there, earns return somewhere between, 5% and 6%. And then you have access to liquidity. So explain it the way you understand it. How is this different from what I think of it?
Yeah, so infinite banking really is your own monetary system to use to go buy cash flowing assets or to invest in real estate businesses, both actively, passively, whatever works in your world. But it's really the money pool, and it's the return and everything else inside the infinite banking system is not like an investment. It's a money pool. I put a dollar in. Do I have a dollar to use? Do I have more than a dollar to use? Do I know what to do with it? So one of the things that a lot of people get confused on is they're told, well, hey, I'm going to go finance cars. I'm going to go finance equipment. I'm going to finance my vacations. And I'm going to pay myself back just like I would the bank. Well, you can do that in infinite banking. That I call that infinite banking 101, kind of the basics. What I'm talking about is building a big monetary system where all your money can flow through your bank instead of someone else's. And what I've done with infinite banking is I bought over 30 companies using the infinite banking concept. And then when those companies make money, I flow that money back into my infinite banking system. And I go out and buy more real estate or companies, or I loan money, hard money lending to those companies at 12 or 20%, somewhere in that range. But Mike, if I would loan you $100 million today, and your only obligation to me was that you have to pay me $5 million of interest 1 year from today, would you take the loan?
So the question is, it's a loan with 5% interest only. Of course, I mean, well, in this high interest rate environment, paying 5% on a loan makes a lot of sense. And that's what infinite banking does. You could self-loan, but you got to have the cash balance. I mean, at the end of the day, what you're referring to is having the policy loaded with cash. And just a quick question on the policies that you design. Somebody puts in 100,000 into the policy year one. How much liquidity do they have year one? Just curious, because I've heard different numbers, 85% to 90%, somewhere around there.
Yeah, so if you do it like that, if you make it really cash rich the first year, then in year 10, you don't have much leverage. Okay. So what you can do is the way that we do it, you would have between 60 and 70%. But in year 10, when I put a dollar in, I have a dollar 50 or more to use. Okay. Now that's,
so you use
that's
more of a classic. You're using more classic. So I've seen there's two flavors of this. So one flavor is maximum access to cash. The absolute opposite flavor of that is lowest amount of cash available, but more death benefits, and it improves over the time. Because I use some of these policies where if you have less cash value immediately, you have more cash value later.
So that's exactly like right.
Savings account in essence.
Well, it's kind of the way that Nelson Nash advocated for it. Nelson Nash is kind of the godfather of infinite banking. He wrote the real Bible on it, which is Becoming Your Own Banker, Unlocking the Infinite Banking Concept. And Nelson didn't like policies that were too PUA heavy. Those are what you're talking about, where somebody would put 10% into the actual policy, then they would put 90% into the paid-up additions. And the paid-up additions are dollar for dollar, just like your checking account, right? But and they always are dollar for dollar. They don't leverage. The base policy leverages, but it does take some time. So like in our scenario, it looks something like this. Let's say it was 60%. You put in a dollar, you have 60 cents. The next year you put in a dollar, you have about 95 cents. The third year, about 95 cents. By the fourth year, every dollar you put in, you have a dollar, and it gets better and better and better every year, every single year of your life from there forward. But in the year 10, to kind of give you an idea, if I put in a dollar, I'd have a dollar 50. Now, what happens is if I do it 90-10, right? 90% PUA, 10% into the base, I have to buy a term rider to make that policy not a modified endowment contract or not a MEC. So that means that term has one benefit, death benefit. Okay, it has no other benefits. It has no cash value. It's only a cost. And here's what people that do the 90-10 don't tell you, Mike, is that from the last PUA payment, you have to keep that term rider on there for 7 additional years so that it doesn't MEC. Okay, it's a part of the 7 pay rule. Okay, so they don't show that a lot of times on the illustration, that cost of insurance could go up. And so that's why you put in a dollar and it's 90-10, you would think, well, I had 90%. No, you have like 80% depending on your age and underwriting class because that term costs. Now, to me, when I design something 90-10, I'm designing it to start first. That first year, they're better off than the way that we design it. But do you want to start first or do you want to finish first, Mike?
No, you're providing great perspective that there is no right or wrong. It's different for different folks. And some folks, based on their needs, if they need maximum liquidity, to them, they can potentially take the risk. And you're right, probably 90% really doesn't look like a 90, more like 80. So understanding that additional term component makes a lot of sense. And having 65% access to cash year one is not necessarily a bad setup either. It's just kind of like this. Originally, one of the policies we've done was just a 20-year pay with no, this is just a slow 20-year savings, and then you have much better cash value without focusing on a lot of cash value now. And then some folks have done exactly the opposite. It's not a 20-year pay. It's more like you just load for 7 years as hard as you can, and then kind of the policy pays for its own premiums, but you got minimal death benefits. Because life insurance is both. It's life insurance, right? The main thing is it's death benefit. But the cash component is very powerful, or access to cash in the form of infinite banking. Okay, so I appreciate you. Your niche is something in between, not extreme 20 pay with no heavy load on the cash availability, nor the opposite. You're sort of in the middle somewhere. You said 60-65%, which is makes a lot of sense. And then the other thing you said, and explore this, so don't use the policy to finance your own lifestyle, use the policy to invest into income generating assets so that as they pay back, you can actually repay the policy. Do you understand you correctly? Is that what you do?
Yeah, because what I'm going to do is, let's say that you made me that same offer on the $100 million loan, Mike. And if you want to make me that offer, we can talk about it after the show. But let's say you loan me $100 million. I'm going to take your $100 million and I'm going to find the seller or a bank to give me 80% loan to value with that kind of money. And I'm going to go buy $500 million worth of real estate. Now, if I'm doing it actively, I want to get at least 25% cash on cash return after debt load, right? So
hold the horses. Hold the horses. You just said this, right? So I want to correct this because we're recording this when it's got a whole lot harder to do what you just mentioned. And I mean this with all due respect. The interest rates are up. The returns on equity are, you know, you got to buy incredibly deep, right? You got to buy the right price. And return on equity is a lot more speculative right now because the debt service is up. So I just want to put the word of caution that I don't want to bright and shiny objects. And that feels to me like a bright and shiny object. If that money can be invested conservatively, generating 10, 12% yield somewhere, the hard money loan and first yield position, I could see that, you know, you borrow at 5 from your policy, invest in 10 to 12, and you feel conservative about that, I'm okay with that. I just don't like, and I'm not disrespecting what you're saying, just more of a, this was the case a couple of years ago, you could level up, like there is no tomorrow, but today, most people don't want to do that because they're a risk profile. So that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, but you know what? The thing I look at, Mike, is there's a lot of my real estate clients that really have built a huge portfolio would want more like 40% cash on cash. And people that are brand new or doing it passively, maybe 10% cash on cash. So I was just picking something in the middle just as an example. But you know, here's the thing is I've been doing this 35 years. So whatever the current market conditions are, I can promise you they're going to change. So I try to look at this long term, and I look at it actually 3 generations ahead. So I'm looking at it just as I'm not going to like worry about what the current market conditions are because they're going to change. And when we were in a low interest rate environment, we didn't look at that either. We really looked at it as over time. This economy, like every economy, is going to go through cycles. It does, right? We're in a boom bust cycle because of our economic practices as a government. We are going to be in a boom bust cycle. So, you know, where we are at any particular time is important for your actions today, but you could be building up your fund so that when the opportunities arise, but I could use whatever percent. Okay. Let's just say it's 15%.
Okay.
So, you're going to loan me $100 million. I'm going to make $15 million on it. I'm going to pay you $5 million of interest, right? Interest only, right? So then you ask me, do you want to pay any principal? And I say, no, I'll see you next year, right? Because my money never leaves that account with the insurance contract. I'm borrowing the insurance company's money. Number one, what that means is that if I'm using it to invest in real estate, I can deduct that interest. Assuming that I'm in the 37% bracket with no state tax, I'm going to be paying around 3% to the insurance company. So that's one thing. The other thing is that as that money flows back in from my tenants, I'm only paying 5% gross on the average daily balance. So as money flows back in before I redeploy it, so that means I'm never really paying 5% anyway. Plus it's deductible if I'm using it for a deductible purpose, like investing in real estate. And my money sits in there growing in a tax shelter, guaranteed every single day, never to be taxed again. Once it goes in, it goes in after tax, but then it's never taxed again. And I can distribute that money. I can borrow against it. for the rest of my life and never pay taxes on it again. Now, how many things in your life, Mike, the money that you're earning, you don't pay tax on, and the money that you're paying, you get to deduct? Not very many.
Yeah. So I appreciate this. Jim, what you're explaining is general benefits of the strategy, and I'm not arguing with it, because I've had many guests, including you, nobody's arguing that it is a good strategy in general, but it has a place in individual portfolios. It's not panacea to everything, and it is not a what's the best way for it? There's a portion of individual capital that folks can park in the whole life policy. And I'm just, you know, I'm a big fan of diversification. So I don't like when people say, hey, put all your money into one policy and then use the policy to finance everything else. Because at that point, you have to keep paying the policy. So it's still a life insurance policy. You have to pay contributions every year. There's all kinds of considerations. So it's not take $100 million, put it in the policy, borrow against the policy. You got to have enough money to make the next annual payment on a policy and so on and so forth. So there are strings attached. The policies have certain requirements to be maintained as life insurance policies, and that has to be thought through. But in general, the fact that you can borrow without any credit conditions, credit approvals, because in fact, this is your cash in your life insurance policy. It is shielded from creditors. So there's all kinds of other benefits. But let's just change the conversation a little bit to what's happening out there now. How has this changed, or has it changed at all, with interest rates having gone up? The reason I'm asking this question is because it's been pretty significant change. It has created a number of headwinds ahead for the economy. We haven't seen these interest rates going up this fast and furious in a while, wherever. So we're dealing with high interest rates. How has it changed your business? What's happening? Are insurance companies loaning money at higher than 5%? Because 5% is standard. Before, you could actually borrow at like 3.75. I'm sure the 3.75 is long gone. Now it's more like 5% now. So what's changed with the interest rates having gone up so much?
Well, this is the thing that's kind of cool about the insurance contracts and these insurance companies is, one, is that the interest rates and the dividends kind of have the same effect. So as interest rates go up, dividends go up. So right now, there are still companies out there. There are companies that offer a fixed loan and a variable loan. The variable loans are around 5.2. Fixed loans are 4% on some. Now, that does change your dividend performance to, and it's called direct recognition. But Mike, I want to go back to what you said is, you know what? I don't pay premiums. My customers and my tenants pay premiums. So I don't have to fund this. And those rents and those profits, they got to go into somebody's bank. I let them pay my premiums because when I put a dollar in on some of my policies, I have $2 to go reinvest. So what's my rate of return on that? I'm not going to say it's 100% because that's not how it works. It's over time, but it's a monetary system, not an investment. Every dollar that you make right now goes through somebody else's bank. You put every dollar you earn into somebody else's bank and they take that money and they go make money with it. And you never touch your money. Your money never leaves the policy. You're using the insurance company's money. So you have other people's money. You have use and control of that, which is exactly what a bank wants.
Let me ask you this question. The example you gave, $100 million is a big policy, right? So but just use the example that you have. So $100 million goes in the policy, you borrow from the policy. Again, you can't borrow the entire $100 million. You can only borrow 60-65% year one. So just, you know, using your model. But even if you could borrow 100 and you deploy it at 15% rate of return and you paid 5% interest, you have 10% on the money, 10 million bucks. What would be a premium on a policy like this second year? If you're saying that your tenants or your, you know, investments are paying the premium, or a $100 million policy, what would be second year premium that has to be paid? Just curious.
Yeah, so in the second year, what you would do is you would take the $10 million that you earned, and you would, and if, first of all, like I wouldn't say, Mike, that was just my example of if I would loan you a big amount of money, I don't have anybody putting $100 million into the insurance contract. The most that we have is 10, and we have a few, only like, you know, a couple of handfuls of people that are over a million, right, from the beginning. So, but they build up to it. But like, let's just use 100,000.
Okay.
So if you put 100,000, because I like to use round numbers, I went to public school, Mike, so I like to keep it simple. So you put $100,000 in it. In the scenario we just talked about, you make $15,000, right? You're going to pay the insurance company $5,000 of interest. So now you have $10,000. The next year you put in another 100,000 and you have 95% of that to use from just that deposit plus the other 10. So now I put in 100, I have 105 to go use. And I take the 105 and I do exactly the same thing and I make 15% on that money.
Hold on. My question was this. If you put in 100,000 in a policy, what is your required minimum contribution next year?
40.
What are you required generally on a contract the way you structure it? What's the minimum contributions next year? Because you put in 100 first year, 100 second year. Yeah, it's exactly what I was saying initially. If you start committing, you have to keep making these payments for a number of years. Otherwise, the policy, you're going to blow up the policy. So the question is how much do you have to contribute minimum next year to keep the policy properly structured?
The way that we do it, you would have between 40 and 100 that you could put in the policy. And I don't look at it as you have to put it in the policy, because I look at it as you get to put it in the policy, because you get to capitalize the policy just like you're capitalizing your checking account. Again, you have to know what's happening. You know, if you know what's happening, you'll know what to do. Right now, you're putting all of your money, every dollar that you earn, through somebody else's bank. They take it and they loan it back to you, because there's only one banking system in the world, at a multiple. And you pay it happily to the bank because they require it. And what I'm saying is stop doing that. Put it in your banking system and then you borrow the money from the insurance company and go make money with it.
Yeah, I hear you. All I was trying to do with the question is just to establish that there are requirements for the audience, that folks need to be aware that if they put in 100K in a policy year one, they're going to have required premium year two. They're going to have minimum required premium year three. Of course, you can do more than a minimum, the certain range. So that's my point. As far as not questioning the overall idea, right? You can keep your cash in the bank, and the bank will pay you a certain rate of return, or you could keep the cash in a whole life insurance contract and have access to cash, which has its own benefits. So not questioning overall concept of infinite banking. It makes sense. There's no argument. I'm just trying to understand the folks at least have an idea when they go and commit to writing a 100K check in a policy. They got to have some expectation that there will be at least a minimum needed next year. This is not exactly you write a 100K check and you have no contribution next year, no contribution the following year. It means that there's certain minimum commitments that they have to have. And then if they meet those commitments, they can go and do more. But it's something to keep in mind. It's a planning exercise. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, but you know, and I agree with you. If you look at it, Mike, in year 10, okay, because we like to think long-term. We need to think long-term with money. Is I put in a dollar, I have a $1.50 to go use. Okay? So if that's the ratio, I put in a dollar, I have a $1.50 to use. Do you want the check? And so you write me a check for 100 grand. I turn around and give you access to 150 grand. If that's the ratio, do you want that check to be big or small that you write me?
So if I understand you correctly, what you're referring to is if you don't borrow from the policy, you'll have ability in the future years to borrow way more than the dollar contributed, right? If you have all your cash value borrowed, of course, you can't go borrow $1.50 on a next contributed dollar. So
you can have all the money.
You have ability to borrow more than you put in the last year, right?
You could have all the money borrowed out and you still, the dollar that you put in, you could take out $1.50 and use it. You could have all of your money in motion. So it doesn't have anything to do with how much money you have borrowed against the policy, because that's the policies that we use are called non-direct recognition, which means when you take a loan from those policies, there's no change in the performance of the policy. There's no change in the dividend. So I put in a dollar, I have $1.50 to go put into real estate, to go put into businesses. I win. Your checking account at the commercial bank will never do that.
That's interesting. So what you're saying is in year 10, if you're using this approach, because you build up enough value in the policy grows its cash value by itself. So you have ability to borrow $1.50 from the policy for every incremental dollar put in year 10, right? That's what you're saying.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it makes sense. So I'm not going to argue. That's a nice feature, but it does require a long-term horizon, and it does require planning. So as folks go into infinite banking, it is something that it needs to have a multi-year horizon. Just because you can do it year one, you have to be aware of what you're going to be doing year two and year three and year four. But the best way to think about this is what I've been told, is to think of the investing in a whole life policy as a conservative part of your portfolio. Just think you can invest in real estate, you can invest into stocks and bonds, whatever you're comfortable to invest. We do only real estate, so for us, it's we know that. But using whole life as a piggy bank to finance your investments makes complete sense.
Okay, Make Bank Without the Bank. I'm sorry, I don't know why it's blurry there. There we go. It's less than 100 pages. And this will give you an idea of exactly what infinite banking can do for you. I give examples in here. It's very straightforward. It's 98 pages. Take you less than 2 hours to read. And then we have a community, community.createtailwind.com, where I go through and explain to you in detail infinite banking. You can ask questions. You can send them to me. I'll respond. And look, Mike, what we do is we tell people about it and you come to one conclusion. This is for me or this is not for me. There's no sales pitch. It's just educating people on how it works.
Yeah, I appreciate it. So how would folks get the book? Is there a website? Where should they go to get a copy of the book?
It's going to be on Amazon November 14th. And if you send me an email, I'll make sure that at jimoliver@createtailwind.com. We're going to have some special promos when the book is released on November 14th. And I'd be happy to make sure that you're aware of those promos. And there's some giveaways and all kinds of stuff that we're going to do on that day.
Thank you. I appreciate your offers. And we'll put it in the show notes. So thank you for coming on the podcast. Appreciate you, and best of success in infinite banking. It is a great system, and we certainly we consume it too. I think it's a great approach. Of course, there are different ways to implement it, and let folks talk to experts like you and understand what's right for them. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Mike, for coming on. And Mike, you know what? I appreciate some of the things that you said and some of the challenges, because I want people to challenge us on the way that we're thinking about it. We've been doing it so long, and I like that you expressed your opinion. So thank you for doing that, not just shaking your head and doing that. Cause that doesn't do your audience or anybody any good, because you should challenge it. Whoever you're talking to about infinite banking, if they can't show you why it's a good thing for you, then don't do it.
Yeah, you have to understand what you invest in. And that, but all my questions we're trying to lead to is understanding what you invest into. And infinite banking or whole life policies, because they're life insurance policies, they have multi-year premium commitments. So it's not one of those things where folks think, I'll just park $100K and then next year I'm all good. What do you have to pay the premium and you don't have the cash? Something to keep in mind. So that's right. All I was trying to do. I was just trying to get folks to open their eyes and understand. So it makes sense, but there are features of the strategy, and you have to be well aware. Thank you again. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to bigmikefund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike's slot name. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.